thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Chad, I want to close out our interview by moving to some issues of culture.
Okay.
Please don't feel the need to give expansive answers to each of these questions, because I have a lot of questions for you, as you know. First question is, what do you think are the most pressing issues and the most pressing questions of our time?
You mean for Christians or just generally?
Generally in our culture or in our society. And mostly, I would say, outside the church.
Okay. I would say the most pressing issues in our time would have to include the ongoing debate on what it means to be a man and a woman. I think no matter if you're Christian or not, there's a lot of things that have to be settled there in terms of public policy and how we go about interacting with each other. The institution of marriage is affected by that. The institution of parenting and family building is affected by that. And therefore, policymaking is affected and all down the line. It's just a huge, huge issue facing us as a culture is what are we going to say a man is? What are we going to say a woman is? And how does that affect everything else? I think that's, you know, clearly part of the national conversation in America. I think another thing that really faces us is the energy crisis that we face. You know, we know that we don't have enough fossil fuel to go on forever. What will that energy crisis bring about in terms of war, in terms of bounty, in terms of innovation and creativity? I think that the energy problem, how are we going to manage energy for the next several generations, is probably one of the most practical and fundamental issues humanity faces as a whole. So I think, you know, the church should have some things to say on that too, in terms of stewarding well God's creation and being a part of those conversations. I think maybe a third issue that's facing everybody, especially right now, is in America, especially is the economic climate that we're in. You know, we're seeing rates possibly hit double digits coming in January, and we haven't seen that in a long time, maybe since the 80s. And, you know, how to manage and balance a global economy for the long term and create stability that continues to lift those in poverty out of poverty. I think that's an ongoing problem until we solve it. So I'd say those are probably the big three questions facing humanity right now.
That's really good stuff. Once the baby boomer generation passes, Chad, do you think conservative politics will still be influential in this country?
I do. I think, and here's why. If you think when you say that conservative politics, if you associate that with a name like Donald Trump or maybe hopefully a Robert George, if you're up on your conservatism, I think, you know, as it's tied to those individuals and those people, no, it'll go through every other cycle that every other government and political philosophy has gone through, where it will be added to and subtracted from and called different things. And, you know, I'm a conservative that really is more of a classical liberal. And so,
sure,
you know, these terms have really, really gone through the ringer, and how we treat language now makes this conversation even more difficult. I think the general idea of conservatism, if you take it to mean that most of the good ideas of the past are worth keeping and preserving and institutionalizing into how we sculpt and mold the future, I think that as a political philosophy will always be part of the spectrum. I think that's just a human thing. Traditionalism might be a better word than conservatism. To really let tradition guide most of what we do and slowly, slowly innovate and progress, rather than liberalism that's like kind of out of control progressivism. I think that will always be part of the political spectrum as well. Those that want to change things very quickly, maybe overthrow things, maybe, and all for the right reasons too, want to change, make rapid change and throw away tradition.
Sure.
I think those are two poles of a spectrum that are just inherent in human politics. And so it'll come under different names and under different faces, and people will put their different spin on it. But the idea of preserving the good ideas of the past and letting them guide and judge the future as guardrails that might not be immovable, but certainly should inform what we do, I think that'll always be part of what we do in human politics.
Sure. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Chad, do you think centrism and moderate politics have a place in our society?
I don't like the term centrist.
Yeah.
Just because I think there are just so many different facets to political life, you know, parts of life that are political that really do affect the society around you, that sometimes you're going to be extreme.
Right.
And not centrist at all.
Right.
Because something is totally wrong or totally right. And sometimes you're going to be dead center because, you know, a median approach to a public policy solution or a public division of wealth or things like mm-hmm. that just makes sense. And so I'm never really keen on centrism, but I do think that there are almost always valid points and valid considerations from both of the poles, let's say, of conservatism and liberalism.
Yeah.
That should be incorporated, respected, thought through into our solution, our political solutions and political actions. So, you know, if that's what we mean by a more centrist approach, where we're willing to honestly look at the different political perspectives along the spectrum and incorporate what's good in all sides and
yeah.
reject what's bad in all sides, I'm all for that. And I think that's a really hard thing to do nowadays because of how our media intake is set up. You kind of get conservative media or you get liberal media. And I think we're living in one of the worst echo chambers in human history.
Yes.
And it's I don't think conservative people have liberal friends, and I don't think liberal people have conservative friends.
Yep.
And the chambers get worse and worse and worse, and we villainize each other. And man, I would love to see this next generation rise up and go, this is enough. You know, we're gonna get back to real friendships. We're gonna get back to face-to-face interactions and really embrace humanity again and realize that we're, you know, none of us can exist on the poles in and of themselves without the people on the other side of the pole. We have to do this together. And when I say do this, I mean live life on this planet together. And so maybe I am a centrist after all. Yeah.
No, I love that. That's a great answer. Chad, do you think Judeo-Christian values and classical virtues are on the decline in our society?
I do. I do think they're on a decline in our society. I think our society is, I think our society has really rejected Judeo-Christian values over the last few decades, maybe more hastily in the last 5 years than the last 20. And what I'm hopeful for, Ryan, is because that's true. I think that's objectively true. There's been a rejection of those values and ideals in the institutions, in the spheres of public influence, in culture making, movies, film and music and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's objectively true. However, I think it's also been so hastily discarded in the last 5 years that a lot of people are kind of looking up and going, wait a minute, where is this progressivism taking us? Where are we headed with this? Where, you know, some of the institutions and some of the norms that have been taken for granted in culture have been so jettisoned that we don't have a good roadmap for where we're headed.
Right, right.
So I think there will be a revival of sorts of the Judeo-Christian values. I think we'll have to overcome some of the obstacles of, you know, people kind of tacitly chalking those values and ideals up to colonialism, to racial issues.
Sure.
I think we'll have to get back to a place where there's a fair evaluation of those ideals and values. And we're not there at all yet. But I think, you know, Thinkersensitive and other folks who are trying to represent the best in the Judeo-Christian values and ideals and present them in a way that is objective, that's fair, that's rational, that's compassionate to other perspectives. I think those are the things that will actually win the culture back to those ideals and values. And I think we desperately need that. Again, because I believe that they're true and I believe that they have roots that are deeper than just a superficial contextual culture. I think they're given to us by a divine creator. And so I think we'll always make a return to them, but sometimes it can get pretty dark before we do.
What do you think about the current state of free thinking and free speech in our culture?
I think it's, you know, I think that cancel culture has been seen as the biggest threat to free speech and the expression of ideas by conservatives in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
I actually don't think that's true. I think the biggest threat to free speech and a culture where ideas that are different than yours can be expressed in a safe way.
Sure.
The biggest threat to that is a lack of the virtue of courage. I think there are a lot of people who think and feel things that they would like to express, that they'd like to say, and don't say so more out of a lack of courage to say them in the face of opposition than there are institutions that are trying to silence them.
That's good.
So I actually think a resurgence of the virtue of courage in men and women using their public platforms and using their voice as parents and neighbors and coworkers and friends to articulate and think deeply about the questions to the deep answers in life. The lack of courage there is actually a bigger threat than any law or institution that would ban certain types of speech or any cultural cancellation on Twitter or whatever stupid social media platform we're worried about. I think the lack of courage is actually a much more scary opposition to those things than some woke activists on Twitter.
That's a really good answer. I really like that. What do you think about the current state of civil discourse in our culture?
Well, that's absolutely crap now. You know, I think, if I could be frank,
yeah.
Social media has destroyed public discourse and civil discourse. And listen, I'm not saying that because it's new. I'm saying it's because it removes you from interacting with people directly. It removes you from seeing someone's face when you speak to them and
sure.
addressing them in a way that demands respect that almost universally happens when you're in person.
That creates empathy but is too.
It creates so many things that are necessary for dialogue to be effective. And man, you can post almost anything on a social media platform and they will, through algorithms, through the systemization of how they reveal your post in different feeds, they will find people who love your stuff so that way you can connect and you never hear an opposing opinion on your own threads usually because you've curtailed your friends to in such a way that they all share your view on everything. And you just don't have any discourse anymore unless it's absolute hatred for, you know, pro-lifers or pro-choicers or the religious or the non-religious yeah. or the Democrats or the Republicans. There's just no space anymore for civility to exist.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree. What do you think about the current state of tolerance in our culture?
Well, I think tolerance is a tricky one. I think it's been well said by D.A. Carson and others. I think tolerance has really been expounded upon in evangelical Christianity quite a bit. I don't think I have much to add to that other than
yeah.
tolerance has become something that is is almost expected agreement rather than tolerance.
Right.
And this goes back to the civility thing. Like, you and I have a different perspective on church interaction, and I love you deeply, and I know you love me deeply, and we can disagree on that for the rest of our lives. And
right.
We tolerate each other's opposing views on that, and we don't accept them. You don't accept my view, and I don't accept yours, and that's perfectly fine.
Right.
And we probably feel that we have differing opinions and things that we tolerate in each other that are much more important than maybe that truth or that idea.
Yeah.
So what's difficult is the net behind our tolerance is our friendship, and friendship has become so eroded in our culture that, you know, when you're talking to somebody, you don't have hardly any relationship with them online. And so there isn't a level of tolerance. It's you're either with me or against me. And yeah. there's no other relational bond that can kind of fall behind that as a backdrop that's healthy, in my opinion.
What do you think about the current state of critical thinking in our culture?
Well, you know, I don't know that I'm really qualified to speak to that. I think that I have had just maybe an anecdotal belief that critical thinking has really fallen by the wayside because the academic discipline and rigor that used to be even in the public school system, especially in college campuses, things like that, has really eroded. But, you know, I just don't know. I know that there are millennials and Gen Zs and folks that are, I don't even know what the name is for the folks coming up behind Gen Z. I know that there are a lot of talented people putting out podcasts, putting out social media, YouTube videos, things like that, that are incredibly thoughtful and
sure,
incredibly measured and diplomatic and civil and really get to the heart of issues. I think of, there's a podcast out there by a guy, his name's Coleman something. Coleman Hughes maybe, where he's just so calm and thoughtful and he really thinks through the issues and interviews people and really listens to them and shuts up and really wants to understand their perspective. And man, I'm just encouraged by that too. So I tend to think that we've gotten a lot sillier over the years and left critical thinking behind, but I know that I'm probably wrong on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me. What do you think about the current state of news, media, information, and education in our culture?
Well, I think that I have shown my cards on those.
Yeah.
I think that there's just no sense of, there's no standard of respect or rapport in those platforms anymore. And so you get people on major news networks vilifying and crucifying opposing views and perspectives, throwing up red herrings and throwing up the worst argumentation you've ever heard with no backlash and no accountability for doing so. And I think it's just totally destroyed our ability to depend on some of these bigger media outlets for information that would inform our voting and that would inform, you know, how we work hard to structure our society. It's just, you know, they've almost become, everything's an op-ed, everything's an opinion piece, and it's just really hard to move forward in that setting for me.
Yeah. You touched on this a little bit earlier, but in what ways has social media negatively impacted our society?
Well, I think for all of its good, and I do think there are good aspects to it as well. I don't want to be seen that way, that I'm totally against it. But I think the biggest thing that it's harmed is it's satiated our need for community, face-to-face community, too much. It's supplanted, you know, our organized efforts to get together in person. And I think that's a real downside to social media. I think people drive into their garage and shut the door behind them and, you know, get online on their couch, on their phone and talk to their friends and message their friends and see all their friends' vacation pictures and all these sorts of things and feel connected, but have so little face-to-face interaction that, you know, it's really become a phantom friendship. It's not a real friendship. So, you know, I think it, you know, in a word, in a short phrase, it's destroyed friendship.
No, I can relate to that. Do you still think that most people care about and are concerned with truth?
I think they are. I think that is always going to be true because the truth always has real consequences. So there might be phases or cycles where people are less inclined to work diligently to find the truth or to tether themselves to truth. But the consequences of doing that are so dire and real that the consequences of ignoring truth, I think, bring people back to the realization that there is truth and it's worth pursuing. You know, I think people who lie and lie and lie and spin and misdirect and you know, mislead people through their social media presence and, you know, their influence far out exceeds their character, I think at some point that comes crashing down. And then the reconciliation of who that person really is comes into play. So I think, you know, and that's just one example. But I think the consequences of truth bring people back to an appreciation of the truth, but it may take a long time.
That's really good. I like that a lot. Are you surprised by the level of subjectivity and relativity that we're seeing in contemporary reasoning and contemporary thinking?
Not surprised by it because I think postmodernism has had its effect. And you know, you don't even really hear much about postmodernism anymore. When I was kind of coming up school and, you know, that was the big dog.
Right.
You know, that's what evangelical Christianity had all of its guns pointed at postmodernism for a solid decade, I think. We've kind of moved on because no one cares to talk about postmodernism anymore as a philosophical project.
Yeah.
But the fruit of postmodernism, I think, is now coming to bear because there's all these competing notions of truth and even the outright rejection of truth. And there's these concepts like my truth and, you know, this complete subjectivism that's been adopted that has wrought some pretty nasty fruit. And now we don't know, you know, we have trouble hashing out gender. We have trouble hashing out what family is. We have trouble hashing out what an education ought to be. And, you know, all these different things, I think, are consequences of, you know, decades of academic postmodernism that's now trickled into the culture. And we're having a hard time finding our way back to anything solid and concrete where we agree.
Yeah, for sure. In the mid 20th century, Dietrich Bonhoeffer famously stated that God was being pushed out of Western society by modern man, and that there was no need for God anymore. How do you see this playing out in our society today?
Well, I think he rightfully saw maybe what scientism was going to turn into, you know, this idea that science can explain everything. John Lennox, by the way, wrote a really good little book. It's like 85 pages called Can Science Explain Everything? And it's really good.
Yeah.
He's a philosopher and a scientist, by the way.
Yep.
I think what Bonhoeffer was seeing is that, you know, in the vacuum of a society that doesn't believe in God's existence, that vacuum can be filled with an academic discipline like science. And really science is kind of a label that's not fair. It's really ourselves. It's man at the center of it all, the man at the center of the universe.
Yep.
Science is really more of the tool or the instrument of man to arrive at knowledge in a way that, you know, philosophically becomes idealized as perfect knowledge over time. And so I think that realization or that projection by Bonhoeffer was really astute. I think there's far more public confidence in quote unquote science than quote unquote God, right?
Sure.
Or religion.
Yeah.
I think that, again, you know, science separated from ethics, science separated from the nature and character of God, will eventually have consequences because, again, a rejection of that reality that God does exist and all disciplines are subsets under his rule and authority, I think will have consequences that will bring us back to the realization that, whoa, man is not at the center of the universe. God is at the center of the universe, or a creator of some sort is at the center of the universe. And, you know, that right relationship is going to have to be reconciled. But we might do some really horrible things in the meantime while we keep man at the center. And that's always a battle. I think that's the idolatry battle of keeping man at the center of all things.
Yeah, and that's a battle in all of us as well. It's a battle in the heart, I think, of every Christian, every believer. It's a battle inside myself, I would say.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think there will come a time when atheism is more prevalent than theism in our country?
In our country?
In our country, yeah.
Probably. Probably. If we can keep a relative balance of peace, I think we'll scale towards secularism. If the country gets torn apart ideologically, I think that will be a shocking enough reality to bring some folks back into the fold.
Yeah.
Or maybe they were never in the fold to the fold, I could say. That, you know, there is objective right and wrong. And if I do make that affirmation, there's got to be something underneath it. I don't know that that will be a return to Judeo-Christian values, but I think it will be a return to some sort of deism or some sort of, there's something out there. I can't deny objective right and wrong, but
sure.
I don't know what it is. I think we could return to something like that. But if there's peace and there's no, if there's no, nothing to turn us away from the trajectory we're on now, yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely possible.
What do you think the implications and the consequences of that would be then? What does a godless society look like?
Well, I think authors like Orwell and Huxley and others have done some very creative and imaginative thinking on that. I think C.S. Lewis has as well. So I would echo what those great men have said, yep, probably, because I don't have that kind of imagination.
Sure.
But maybe I resonate most with like a Francis Schaeffer who said, you know, there really is a fork in the road. Those who believe in God will try to reconcile their life and their actions and their duty and their bonds to one another in light of that realization that there is a God. And then there's really one other option. You either live that way where you recognize God and his lordship and that's going to produce certain things, or you're going to be even agnostic, indifferent, or set that there is no God, and you're going to organize your life and all that you do, think, and say along those lines. And I think that will have consequences that will bear out in maybe anti-God ways, like against God, against what God would have and say for us to do. And so I think some really nasty, heinous things will come up along that path, because I think that wrong and evil and rebellion stem from my belief in God. And so I think that there will be man left to his own devices apart from God and against God will create things that are against our creation, against what we're designed to do and be, and really be at every turn against what God says is good, beautiful, and pure. And so I'm not hopeful at all of a culture that's completely without God.
Do you think there'll come a time when Christians are actively persecuted in our society?
Yeah, I do. And that's the reason I think that is because I do think that we'll have enough peace to go completely secular or largely secular at some point. And there will be more and more forks in the road where the culture, the society, the institutions will want to maybe do things with AI or with cloning or with the structure of the family or certain things like that, where Christians just cannot follow the culture anymore to any degree. And we'll see that, collision materialize at those intersections, I think. and that will result in persecution, real persecution. Like,
sure,
we're going to kill you, persecution.
Yeah. Why do you think conservatives are susceptible to conspiracy theories?
I don't know. I really don't have a good answer for that one. Maybe because a lot of the conspiracy theories that are out there are contra-liberal or against the liberal, the liberal authority structures. Conspiracy theories tend to be against existing power structures.
Yeah.
And right now, the existing power structures tend to be liberal, liberal Hollywood, liberal government, liberal media. And so right now, conspiracy theories tend to be against liberalism. And so it makes sense to find a little incubator in conservative circles, maybe hyper-conservative circles even more so.
Yeah.
But if we entered a time where conservative authority reasserted itself in those structures in Hollywood and media and government and all the other institutions, academia, yeah, I think you'd start to see conspiracy theories pop up that would be a contra-authoritarian against conservatives and find a nice little home in liberal circles. So I think it's more indicative of the time that we're in than anything that's inherent to conservatism or liberalism.
That's a really good point. I like that. Why do you think conservatives seemingly have a lack of concern for the environment?
I don't know either. I think that's the dumbest thing. There's so much. Here's real why. Here's the real reason why. Yeah. It's so politicized. You know, it's so politicized now that you can't just be a Christian who believes in good stewardship. You have to adopt theories on global warming or on the energy crisis or whatever, and those tend to be linked to political ideologies that blur all the issues.
Yeah.
If you're a Christian, I don't care what part of the spectrum you're on. Right in Genesis, you see the mandate to care and steward creation.
Right.
To exercise dominion over creation in a way that is flourishing, not destructive.
Sure.
And so, you know, what that means is that Christians are for saving the planet. Now, even that phrase right there is politically charged, and that's probably why Christians stay far, far away from it. But I just don't see any way around the fact that we're called to help. We're the master gardeners and the master caretakers of God's beautiful creation, and we should be working hard to preserve it and steward it well.
Amen. I'm right there with you. Do you think humans will still exist on this planet in 200 years?
I think so. I do. I think so. I think there's a long time yet. I don't get any real sense that the Lord is coming back soon. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why I think that is he's always saw fit to add more and more to his number. And I think the number of people that God wants in his community and grafted into his family is a number that's incomprehensible, truly greater than the number of stars, like he said to Abraham. And so I think that there's going to still be a lot of time left for us to work out a lot of society building and things like that. So I think we're going to be here 200 years from now. I think that there's a chance that, you know, putting space stations out there that are permanent, putting humans on Mars and things like that are really possible. I don't think that at all violates my beliefs. And, you know, I wonder all the time why God created such a huge universe. Is he going to wait until we exercise dominion over all creation? Is creation just the world, or is it literally the universe? I don't know, but I think we'll be here.
Do you believe in alien life?
I believe it's possible. I've never seen anything compelling, which is no indication of anything because I've never studied it. I've never taken it very seriously. It's never been a huge focus in my life. But I think just because of the size of the universe and the creative power of God, that there could be other creatures out there that God's created that we'll never even see because they're so far away. I don't know. I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Doesn't do anything to my theology if there is aliens out there.
Sure. We talked a lot about the negatives of our society. What are some positives and strengths of our current society?
Well, we keep lifting people out of poverty. You know, as much as we see homelessness on the rise in major city centers, our economic situation, even with rates hiking up and everything else, we're seeing global poverty diminish year after year. And so I think that's something to be celebrated. There's a lot of different opinions on what's causing that. I tend to be a pro-capitalist guy, and so I think free markets actually have helped that more than anything else. And so, you know, that's something I really like about our society. I like that you can start a business. I like that you can do a lot yourself to kind of take command and control of your economic situation. So I think that's something that's going really well. I think that, you know, for the moment, we still exist in a self-governing state where we choose our leaders, even if we do it poorly, and we exist in a place where even though culturally you might get shut down, legally you can say what you need to say, and freedom of speech is protected legally. I think there's a lot to be thankful for, especially in the Western world.
Yeah.
In terms of medicine, economics, free speech, political order. I mean, you're still relatively safe. In terms of, you know, we don't see tanks rolling down our streets with machetes and AK-47s and banana clips hanging out. You know, we still have immense amount of freedom and opportunity and the chance for success and a happy life that's fulfilled before God. And so I think there's a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah, for sure. Chad, what is the future of American society?
That's hard to say. I think if we keep going the direction we're going, we're just going to tear it apart. You know, this kind of goes back to the civil discourse question. This kind of goes back to the social media question. I think American society has been something in the past, and it's becoming amorphous and without any definition or contours. The more and more we become and embrace our differences rather than things that we have in common. And as we introduce more and more different cultural ideologies and perspectives, you know, that's a really good thing sometimes. And it's also really difficult to have a fabric of society if we all think so differently that we can't agree on law and the ordering of society and child rearing. And, you know, when we disagree on everything, it's really hard to have a society.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that American society can find root again, which is a conservative idea, in some of the past virtues, American virtues, you know, helping our neighbor, you know, treating one another with respect, you know, entrepreneurialism, you know, some of these things that really define the early American spirit. It wasn't all good, surely, but we have to get back to some touch point where we agree on some things and agree on how we're going to live together. And so I hope that happens for human society, for American society, rather. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's a great answer. Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're the best.
Oh,
you're
man.
A great thinker. You're a great communicator. Always appreciate talking to you. And thank you so much for just coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I love you, bud. I hope you and Courtney are doing great, and really proud of the podcast. Really, really just excited for what you do. And I hope this gets a lot of reach because your podcast is great.
Love you too, man, and hope to see you in person soon.
You bet.
This episode and all episodes of Thinker Sensitive are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinker Sensitive.